Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing. Why
don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it?
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You know, if you join us on a regular basis, I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know that the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as an economic blueprint for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African American owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farm, African-American-owned farmlands, and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of African and African-American young men and women locally, nationally, and throughout the diaspora. This show also educates the African and African-American community about economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio formats such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to you over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming over X, Twitter, and Link. And you know that you can log on to where? PositiveChangePC.com, and you can click on our catalog and you can listen to past shows and the current show that we are broadcasting today. Ladies and gentlemen, this show is also brought to you every week by the Positive Change Purchasing HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And I just told you where you can find us at PositiveChangePC.com. Also, ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which is a 501c3 organization which advocates on behalf of African and African-American renewable energy companies, locally and nationally. Ladies and gentlemen, we are trying not to talk it, but to walk it by our actions. As we always say, Everybody's got something to say, but talk becomes very cheap when it's time to get the work done. So you're hearing how we present, what we present over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a scheduled guest today for you, but we do, and we've looked into our news blog, and you can go to that blog by logging on at positivechangepc.com. You want to go over to our news and events tab, and you want to click on that link, and that will give you our news and events, and there you will be able to find today's subject matter that we're getting ready to, as the young boy said, we're getting ready to jump off into that, and we're going to be talking about the application window for low-income community bonus credits begin today. Now, this particular article was published back on October 19th of this year. The Department of Energy and Office of Economic Diversity opened a new portal for applications for low-income communities bonus tax credits. The tax credit provides a 10 to 20% boost to the value of the investment tax credit, the ITC, for wind and solar projects under 5 megawatt are located in low-income communities or indigenous American land as part of affordable housing development and benefiting low-income households. DOE will award 2 to 4 categories of projects totaling as much as 1.8 gigawatts. DOE must award grants for projects meeting their criteria are located in a low-income community up to 700 megawatts, located on Indian land up to 200 megawatts, part of the qualified low-income residential building projects up to 200 megawatts, part of the qualified low-income economic benefit project up to 700 megawatts. Now, you can find all of this data, ladies and gentlemen, on our website. The low-income community bonus tax credit is a valuable bonus adder for projects serving disadvantaged communities and backed by new market participants. Typical investment tax credits are ITCs. Projects meet prevailing wage requirements can access up to a 30% tax credit for low-income communities. Bonus could boost the credit value up to 50% of the project value, meeting DOE's criteria. For awards, should submit their applications. It says there's a blue link that says here. Now, application submitting in the 30 days will be treated as a submission at the same time and the date after which the point of application will be considered a roll on a rolling basis. The application timing, DOE has a swift timeline for processing applications during recent webinars. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting ready to listen to that webinar in its entirety here. After we do that, we're going to switch gears and we're going to go and we're going to talk about another very, very important application process as it relates to apply for fellowships with DOE, solar offices. And also we're going to look at, for our people who are here locally, is your home ready for the winter? Which there are weatherization materials being given out to residents inside of the District of Columbia. And we're going to give that information out, those locations and times and dates for D.C. residents who come under PEPCO's target area, which is the District of Columbia, known as your nation's capital, Washington, D.C. So we're going to have that information available too here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. But before we do that, we're going to get right into informational applicant webinar, low-income communities, bonus credit programs, 48E, Office of the Economic Impact and Diversity. This was recorded back on September the 29th, 2023. Ladies and gentlemen,
all right. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Informational Applicant Webinar on the Low-Income Communities Bonus Credit Program. We're so glad that you can join us today for this webinar hosted by DOE's Office of Economic Impact and Diversity and the U.S. Department of Treasury. So a few housekeeping items before we get started. This webinar is being recorded, and both the recording and the slides will be published as soon as possible on the DOE's program website. So please take a note of the web address that's listed here. Also, throughout this presentation, we're going to reference various resources and documentation. All of these resources either are or will become available on the program website. And while we will not be addressing any questions during this session, toward the end of the presentation, we will be providing the new email address of the DOE support desk where questions may be submitted. So at this point, I'd like to formally introduce myself. My name is Rebecca Kierlich. I'm the Chief of Energy Justice Projects within the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity of the Department of Energy. And we're very fortunate to have with us today Anisha Stevens. Anisha is the Senior Advisor to the Counselor for Racial Equity at the Department of Energy. And before we dive in, I do want to provide the following disclaimer. Today's webinar provides an overview of the implementation of the low-income communities bonus credit program. It is not a substitute for official IRS guidance on the low-income communities bonus credit program. The webinar will not cover all of the requirements of the program, and as such, participants should refer to the official IRS information on eligibility requirements and the application process. The information provided in this webinar should not be considered tax advice or tax filing support. Please consult a tax professional, accountant, or attorney if you need tax-related assistance. So here's our agenda for today. We're going to cover a brief program overview and then describe the application selection process. We'll talk about the steps of the application process, including registration, submitting an application for allocation, and steps to take once your facility is placed in service. We'll also talk about the supplemental resources that are currently provided or will be provided in the coming weeks on the DOE's program page. And then finally, we'll wrap with important dates and timeframes to be aware of leading up to the program launch and throughout the end of this year. And with that, I'll pass it to Anisha to walk through the program's overview.
Thank you, Rebecca. My name is Anisha Stephen, and I'm the Senior Advisor to the Counselor for Racial Equity at the U.S. Treasury. As you all know, the Inflation Reduction Act is the most significant legislation to combat climate change in American history. It is also one of the largest investments in the American economy in a generation. Because the majority of these investments are delivered through tax incentives, the Treasury Department is honored to be at the forefront of implementing this landmark legislation. On August 10th, Treasury and the IRS released the first final regulation in the Inflation Reduction Act for the 2023 program year of the Low-Income Communities Bonus Credit Program. authorized by Congress. The program, also known as 48 little e, is a historic and significant step forward for implementing President Biden's Investing in America agenda and ensuring that underserved communities and households share in the benefits of the transition to a clean energy economy. Further on this, we'll begin accepting applications on behalf of the IRS on October 19th, which will allow the IRS to begin making allocation awards to this program for the end of this calendar year. We plan to continue to accept applications for the 2023 program through early 2024. Next slide. The final guidelines and the revenue procedure that we released on August 10th contain all the information to determine program eligibility, such as the calculation of financial benefits, standards of commercial readiness, and requirements that projects should not be placed in service prior to receiving an allocation award. The revenue procedure also lists all documents and applications that you will need to submit. The purpose of this webinar is to focus on the application process, so I'm not going to go into detail on all of these items, but please take a careful look at the guidance documents, which can be found on both the IRS website and the DOE landing page. There will also be more information later in the presentation about additional resources that will be provided over the next few weeks to provide additional clarity to taxpayers and project applicants. Next slide. The Low-Income Communities Bonus Credit Program is an allocated credit bonus that provides a 10 or 20% boost on top of the existing 30% energy investment tax credit. The program will allocate 1.8 gigawatts of capacity each year to solar or wind projects. To be eligible for the program, an energy facility must be in one of four categories that qualifies for either a 10 or 20% tax credit bonus. The 1.8 gigawatts of annual capacity is divided for the 2023 program year among the four categories in the following manner. First, 700 megawatts will be reserved for facilities located in low-income communities. Low-income communities is defined in final regulations and includes census tracts of poverty rate of at least 20% for areas with median family income no more than 80% of the state's median family income. 70% of this category of 490 megawatts will be available for residential behind-the-meter. Second, 200 megawatts will be reserved for facilities located on Indian land. Third, 200 megawatts will be reserved for facilities that are part of federally subsidized residential buildings. A list of eligible housing programs for this category is available in the final guidance and also separately on the DOE landing page. And lastly, 700 megawatts is available for facilities where at least 50% of the financial benefits of the electricity produced go to households with incomes below 200% of the poverty line or below 80% of the area median gross income. These with environmental justice concerns. The second is to encourage new market participants. And third, to provide social and economic benefits to individuals and communities that have been historically overburdened with pollution, adverse health or environmental effects, and marginalized from economic opportunities. To further our impact in developing this program to meet two goals, we focus on the people and places disproportionately impacted by energy insecurity. We know that some parts of the country and some facility owners may need additional time to reach commercial readiness and put together competitive applications. Because of this, in the final guidance, you'll see that at least 50% of the program's capacity is set aside for two selection criteria. Using these set aside for additional selection criteria helps us meet the goals we outlined for the program. The additional selection criteria fall into buckets. The first additional selection criteria is based on facility ownership and includes facilities owned by tribal enterprises, Alaska Native corporations, certain tax-exempt entities, renewable energy cooperatives, and qualified renewable energy companies. Please refer to the guidance for the exact definitions of each of these ownership additional criteria if you feel as you could qualify for it. The second additional selection criteria is based on geography and include facilities located in areas with the highest energy burden and most least investment. This is indicated by facilities that are located in poverty counties or in areas that have high energy costs as determined by the Climate and Economic Justice Group. On the DOE landing page, a mapping tool is available that helps public identify whether a potential facility makes this additional selection criteria. As demonstrated on this table, when submitting an application for the program, an applicant will choose which category of the four categories their facility is eligible for and also indicate whether they meet one or more of the additional selection criteria. I'll turn it back over to Rebecca to describe the application process. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Anisha. So now we're going to dive a little deeper into the application selection process. As announced earlier this week, the 2023 program year will begin on Thursday, October 19th at 9 a.m. Eastern. This is when registered applicants may begin to submit applications for all four categories related to their facilities in the new DOE applicant portal. The applicant portal web address is listed here, and you're welcome for the October 19th launch. Please note that applications submitted within the first 30 days of program opening will be treated as submitted on the same time and at the same date. In other words, there is no advantage to submitting an application on the first day or on the 30th day or any time in between. And we really do want to encourage applicants to take their time in filling out their application and ensure that they are correct and complete. So after the 30th day, and more specifically at midnight Eastern Time on Saturday, November 18th, the 30-day application window, the DOE review team will take a look back at the applications that were submitted, and if any category sub-reservation is oversubscribed, a lottery will take place to determine the review order of the applications that have come in during that time frame. Now, regardless of the total capacity remaining, any application category after the 30-day application window, the applicant portal will continue to remain open for additional application submissions until the close of the program year. Any applications that come in after the 30-day window will be added to the review queue on a rolling basis in order that they were received. And there is not yet a set date for the close of the 2023 program year. That will be announced in the coming months. But depending on the volume of applications submitted, we do plan to accept applications in the 2023 program year through early 2024. So the program year does not necessarily coincide with the end of the calendar year. And as Anisha mentioned, at least 50% of the total capacity in each facility category will be reserved for qualified facilities meeting certain additional selection criteria. And so to better understand how we operationalize this capacity carve-out, let's take a look at a category for example. So the table at the top shows the capacity breakout of Category 4 with 50% of the 700 megawatts split between additional selection criteria and non-additional selection criteria application options. There are different scenarios that may take place depending on the capacity between additional selection criteria and non-additional selection criteria applications. And those various scenarios are written out here. And while I won't read this verbatim, generally speaking, the additional selection criteria set aside is always protected. So in this case, if fewer than 350 megawatts of additional selection criteria projects are submitted, that 350-megawatt carve-out for future submissions. However, if more than 350 megawatts of additional selection criteria applications are submitted, those applications will take review priority over all non-additional selection criteria up to the full 700 megawatts. And then finally, if applications submitted exceed the initial or remaining capacity available to them, a lottery will take place for this project. So how is the review order determined in the lottery scenario? Let's say here that each row of this table is an individual application for a facility. You'll see that the review order is determined by whether the application meets ownership and or geographic criteria. Applications meeting both ownership and geographic criteria will be prioritized ahead of applications meeting only one. In many cases, we expect that projects will meet ownership or geography, but not both. That's the next three applications shown here in review order 2, 3, 4. Also, ownership and geography are weighted equally as shown in this order. Additionally, no prioritization is given for applications that meet more than one qualifier. So, for example, an owner that is both an Alaska Native corporation and a renewable energy cooperative. And then finally, applications that do not report to meet any additional selection criteria are red flags and reviewed only if there is room capacity in the category. And remember, this ordering is only done if there is oversubscription within the first 30 days. All applications that are received after the initial 30-day window are ordered based on their submission timestamp. So after the initial 30-day application window closes, we will publish a program capacity dashboard on the applicant portal homepage. This dashboard will provide applicants and the general public information regarding how much available capacity is allocated, pending allocation, and remaining for each category and application option. After the dashboard is posted on the website, it will be updated in real time based on when applications for allocations are submitted, as well as when applications are approved by IRS. So now I'll cover the general application process overview. So here are the basic steps of the application process. The very first requirement for anyone who wishes to submit an application on behalf of their organization must create an account with login.gov. This will grant you access to log in to the DOE applicant portal to register and submit applications. The registration process includes providing certain details about your organization. And then at that point, you're able to apply for an allocation of capacity limitation by submitting applications for individual qualifying solar and wind facilities. The DOE review team will conduct an initial review of the application and provide a recommendation to IRS to approve or deny the application based on whether it satisfies the required criteria. Additional documentation may be requested by the DOE review team at this point. This is called the cure period, and applicants have exactly 21 business days to submit the requested information. And then once a recommendation is made, IRS will review and issue an approval or denial letter for that facility. Facilities may be placed in service up to 4 years after an allocation award is granted by the IRS. And once the facility has received an allocation and also has been placed in service, the applicant will return back to the DOE applicant portal to submit additional information. DOE will review the placement service information and the documentation, and then again make a recommendation to IRS, who will make the final eligibility determination for the facility. So we're going to dive into each of these steps in a little more detail, starting with the logging process and the registration process. So first, the applicant must be the organization that owns the solar or wind facility, and the individual who registers and submits application on behalf of that organization must have the legal authority to bind the applicant. So please make sure that you have an understanding of the ownership structure of the project and comply with these requirements before moving forward. To register for the program, applicants must create a login.gov account. If you don't already have a login.gov account, feel free to set one up at any time, and we do encourage you to do so ahead of the program launch. You can find a link to the login.gov setup page on the DOE program website. And then once the application portal becomes available, you'll also be able to access login.gov from the homepage. It is highly recommended that you use an email address that's associated with the organization for which you are applying. So upon logging into the portal for the first time, you'll be asked to agree to the privacy notice and complete the registration process. The required information includes the first and last name of the contact. We also would like you to fill out secondary contact for your organization, the legal organization name and contact information, the parent organization information, if that's employer identification number or taxpayer identification. identification number for tax filing purposes, the organization's physical street address, and the organization's type. You'll select from a drop-down menu here. And then finally, confirm if your organization is eligible for elected payment. So now this is important. We do want our future applicants to be aware of current limitations in the portal related to registration. We understand that in some cases, organizations, particularly larger organizations, may have multiple individuals that create and submit applications for different facilities. This is allowed. However, individuals from the same organization cannot currently access each other's applications. In other words, there is no organization-wide view of the application that has been created by multiple individual applicants. This is something we plan to build out in the future. It is really important to note that organizations submitting multiple applications for different facilities should carefully coordinate to ensure that duplicate applications for the same facility are not submitted. And you can see this visually depicted here on the upper left, where two separate applicants, applicant A and B, with two separate login.biz email accounts to work for the same organization, can view and submit their own applications on behalf of the organization, but they will not be able to see each other. And a single login.biz account can only be tied to one organization. So for example, if you are a tax professional seeking to submit applications on behalf of multiple organizations, have legal authority to do so, you would need to register with login.gov under different email accounts to create applications on behalf of each organization. So after you successfully register your organization, you're ready to begin the process to submit a application for outpatient. So the first thing to do is to select the category and application option that is applicable for the facility for which you are applying. All categories have an application option for additional selection criteria and non-additional selection criteria applications. Category 1 has two additional options for residential behind the meter and everything else. One application must be created and submitted for one facility. There's currently no bulk submission application option. When you begin an application, it will ask for specific information on the facility location. We expect that at the time of application, most facilities will have a known street address, but you may enter not applicable here if you don't know the street address or there is not a street address associated with the location of your project. In all cases, city, state, and zip codes are still required. Applicants are also going to be required to enter the GPS coordinates of their facility. If you know your facility's address, it can be very easily found using your preferred public mapping tool, and you may copy and paste that information here. Latitude and longitude coordinates must be at least 5 decimal places. The application will also ask whether the facility is a solar energy facility or a wind energy facility, and if it's installed in connection with energy storage. The facility size section will ask you to enter capacity, the nameplate capacity in kilowatts. The AC capacity is always required, and the DC capacity is required for solar technology only. Please carefully review your entries before submitting. This determines the allocated capacity requested, and these fields are not able to be edited once the application is submitted. You're also going to want to take great care in ensuring that these values are substantiated by the supporting documentation. Applicants will also make a series of selections for facility usage by selecting the applicable radio buttons for customer off-taker types, ownership models, and point of interconnection. Customer off-taker types and point of interconnection selections are dependent on the category and application process, the application option that you apply to. If an applicant applies for application option with additional selection criteria, you'll be prompted to select eligible ownership geographic criteria type. And the last two sections of the application include the document upload and attestation. Applicants will complete the application documentation section by uploading all required documents. Before submitting your application, a pop-up window will display the required attestation. Read and certify by checking each checkbox next to the attestation clause. Documentation and attestation requirements are also dependent on the facility type, so encourage you to refer back to the program guidance for those details. In every application that an individual creates will show up in a searchable list view under the organization application tab of the portal. A unique control number is automatically assigned to each application that's created. You can search your applications by this control number or by other searchable fields, such as the application status, project name, or category type. Portal notifications are another important feature. Applicants will receive an email each time that they have a new notification in their applicant portal. You can find the notifications link on the navigation bar to view a notification. This is where you're going to receive notifications around the status of your application changing, and you'll also receive notifications here if additional documentation or clarification have been requested by the DOE review team. And as a reminder, information or documentation satisfying the request must be submitted via the portal no later than 21 business days from the date of the notice or the application being withdrawn. So it's important to make sure that you are checking the portal every time you get a notification update. Once DOE has reviewed the application and made a recommendation, it will go to IRS, who will make the final determination. Applicants will receive a notification when IRS has made that determination. Applicants can view any official IRS allocation approval or denial letter in the attachments tab of their application for allocation records. Please note that IRS approval or denial letters are only available from the portal. They will not be mailed, and the portal does allow to download those letters. So a capacity limitation allocation award applies only to the facility included in the application and taxpayer who applied and received an allocation award for that facility. However, if taxpayers want to request a transfer of allocation to a new owner of the same facility, they may email the DOE support desk to initiate this request, and they may be asked to provide their documentation. The successor taxpayer must also be registered in the applicant portal for the transfer to take place, and we'll be providing in the coming weeks more details on this process. Transfers may only occur after the facility has been allocated a capacity limitation award and before the facility is placed in service. And as a reminder, a capacity limitation allocation award may not be transferred to a different facility. So at this point, we'd like to talk a little bit more about the place in service requirements. Once facilities are placed in service, but prior to filing tax forms with the IRS to claim the credit, additional information must be submitted in the applicant portal. Applicants will need to go back into the portal, find the application, and begin the second step of the process. Applicants will be instructed to review their original application and confirm the final as-built nameplate capacity of their facility. All final nameplate capacity values must correspond with the required supporting documentation. Only certain non-material changes are allowed in the placement service page. Therefore, there are only a limited number of fields that can be edited. However, if you do need to report other changes, please reach out to the DOE help desk. Just like the application for allocation, applicants will be required to upload documentation applicable for their facility and the category to which they have applied. They'll check the required attestation checkboxes and submit the information for DOE and IRS review. When IRS has completed its review, applicants will receive a notification that IRS has issued eligibility on this qualification letter. And again, that can be found in the applicant portal. If the IRS issues an eligibility letter, the applicant may then claim the energy percentage increase on their applicable tax filing form for the upcoming tax year. Another provision in the Inflation Reduction Act is called elective pay, which has a separate requirements that are not covered here. If an applicant will be making an elective pay election, additional steps are required, and that can be found at irs.gov/elective pay. So in certain cases, there may be differences between the capacity originally allocated versus the as-built installed capacity at place in service. The consequences of capacity modifications are different depending on whether capacity has increased, decreased, and by how much. So if the capacity increases, but it is still below the 5 megawatt, the 10 or 20 percentage point increase by the reduction factor. And just a reminder, anything above the 5 megawatt AC limit is called by the pressure. So this reduction factor, you can see here in the calculation of the box, it's the capacity limitation allocation divided by the total nameplate capacity installed. So in this example, the Category 1 facility received 300,000 dollar cost basis receives an allocation for 100 kilowatts and 125 kilowatts subsequently placed in service. So the reduction factor equals 100 kilowatts divided by 125 kilowatts, which is 80%. The credit increase based on the original allocation would be the cost of 300,000 multiplied by 10% for a Category 1 project, equaling $30,000. The adjusted credit increase would be $30,000 multiplied by the 80% reduction factor for a total of $24,000. Conversely, capacity decreases. For capacity decrease, the percentage of work is maintained if the facility size is reduced by no more than the greater of 2 kilowatts or 25% of the allocated capacity. Larger reductions, however, will result in disqualification. The application may also be disqualified after receiving an allocation of any of the following groups. The facility location changes. The facility cannot satisfy the financial benefit requirements for Category 3 or Category 4. The facility is not placed in service within 4 years of an allocation award, or the facility receives an allocation ownership criteria, and the ownership of that facility then changes such that the ownership criteria is no longer satisfied. There are some exceptions to this, so please reference the final regulations for those details. Okay, so now we've moved on to program resources. One particular resource that we're very proud to host is the Public Mapping Tool. This has been created by our partners at NREL, and it's hosted on the DOE program website. It shows census tracts that meet definition of Category 1 low-income communities, as well as census tracts that meet geographic conditional selection criteria. And as Anisha covered earlier, that includes persistent poverty counties and census tracts that have been specifically identified as having a high energy burden by the Climate and Economic Justice Screening Pool. And I do want to take this opportunity to review some helpful reminders about the Public Mapping Tool. This program's definition of Category 1 is low-income tax credit, and as such, Category 1 maps are identical to the existing U.S. tax credit map. Also importantly, program-provided mapping resources are not available to identify Indian land, so you will need to reference the statutory definition of Indian land with Category 2 eligibility. For those that are familiar with the CJIS map, it includes 8 different categories of burdens. And just wanted to highlight again that for the purposes of this program, only the energy category within the CJIS mapping tool is eligible for additional selection criteria. Data from all 3 of these sources are updated over time, and each time there's an update, the previous data is eligible for 1 year after the update is completed. Additionally, locational eligibility is only verified upon application submission. And then finally, DOE will plan to publish the underlying shapefile layers of the map and an Excel data file with census tracts to increase program information accessibility. And I see there's a lot of support for that one. And then just as a general disclaimer, the mapping tool is intended for geolocation purposes, so it should not solely be relied upon by taxpayers to determine eligibility. We're also very excited to announce a dedicated email address for program questions. This is ejbonussupport@hq.do.gov. So any questions that you might have related to the content of this webinar or any time thereafter may be submitted to this address. We do want to remind applicants that for the guidance, there is no dispute process for capacity allocation denial decisions or for determination of ineligibility at the placement service stage. So this email address should not be used for that purpose. And then finally, DOE and IRS will not provide tax advice through this email address. Any questions relating to tax guidance or tax filing support should be directed to the applicant's tax professional, accountant, or attorney. The DOE's Low Income Communities Bonus Credit Program website will also host a variety of helpful program resources. This includes the applicant checklist. This is up on the website as of today. It's a handy 4-page digestible checklist of information and materials to prepare applicants to submit an application. And then in the next couple of weeks, we're also going to be posting a portal user guide with very detailed instructions and screenshots of each step of the application process, as well as an FAQ document. We're also working to post consumer disclosure forms, so applicants entering into with consumers must attest that consumer disclosures have been provided to customers for the program requirements and as detailed in guidance. Applicants are encouraged to use their applicable state-approved disclosure forms where they are available. However, we are providing these resources which can be used to satisfy the program. Okay, and then finally, the program timeline. So we're going to wrap today with some key dates and time frame. So in addition to today's webinar, as mentioned, the applicant checklist is now available on the program page. The DOE support desk is also available for any inquiries. On October 10th, we'll provide that FAQ document and user guide, and the recording and slides from today's webinar will be published no later than this date. On October 19th, the application portal opens and the initial 30-day application window begins. November 18th is the last day of that 30-day application window, and then enrollment application submissions continue thereafter. The following week, the week of November 20th, DOE will conduct lotteries as necessary to reorder the DOE applications, and that's also when the program capacity dashboard will be published. And then IRS allocation letters will begin to be issued towards the end of the calendar year. That concludes the content of today's webinar. Thank you for your attention and your interest. Please submit any questions to the email address.
Ladies and gentlemen, you were just listening to a very, very valuable webinar about these tax credits and how they are going to be made available. The problem I have with this process, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that we are looking at the date of December 13th, 2023. Now, I have tried to stay up to date on providing this information for the African and African-American community as relates to our business sectors, those who are in the industry. I'm speaking as the president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar. I know that out of over 11,000 firms doing business in the United States of America, we have less than 35 African-American owned firms. I have no way of having data on how many projects these firms have, and they have applied to this program for to take advantage of these credits. And the reason why I'm saying that, ladies and gentlemen, because you heard the young lady talking about the map that shows you where these overburdened communities are. And when you look at the red states in the deep south, where over 80% of our African-American population resides, we are all in those states. That is the territorial areas that impact us, where we live every day. The point that I'm trying to get out to you, ladies and gentlemen, is that President Biden, one of the first things he did when he came to office was he signed Executive Order 14008. That executive order became known, and you had the Build Back Better legislation and the Inflation Reduction Act, where the funding for the implementation of these programs was passed. 2023, yours truly, as the president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, we went to the Congressional Black Caucus and tried to have them put a us on their agenda to host a brain trust around these issues of where is the Green Economic Development Plan for African Americans in the implementation of the Build Back Better and the Inflation Reduction Act as it relates to us getting funding and being able to take advantage of these tax credits. Now, as we look, we were not able to do that. That wasn't important enough with the CBC. We sent a check to pay for it. No, they sent the check back. This wasn't a discussion that nobody wanted to have. As we fast forward to where we are today, if you look, ladies and gentlemen, it's over. If you don't have the technical assistance for paying funding to pay for these rural African-American townships that are part of the Honorable Johnny Ford's organization, which I am a member as president of the National Association of Blacks and Solar. Their question to me was, as I began to expose them to these opportunities over a year ago, how do we get some of this money? You have to apply. If you were listening to the application process, you have to hire a professional consulting firm, either a law firm, either an accounting firm, either an environmental engineering firm with staff people who are proposal writers who can get these federal applications done. Because you have to know the industry and you have to know the government process and how to write these grants. The National Association of Blacks and Solar, we are working right now trying to get a technical assistance grant to pay grant writers to carry the water in this missing link. We left out because we don't have the funding as minority firms to pay somebody $15,000, $16,000, $20,000, write a grant proposal that they might get some money on. This is problematic, ladies and gentlemen. I have about 2 more minutes in today's show. One thing I would like to recommend is that people go to the website at positivechangepc.com. Once they get to the website, they are going to want to, in fact, click on News and Events. And under News and Events, you're going to find an article entitled Apply for Fellowships with DOE's Office, Solar Office. You want to click on that. There is a brief video that you can scroll down. It's about 2.5 minutes long. I don't have time to play it. Fellowships at the U.S. Department of Energy. You want to click on that. Listen to these young folks who are coming in to their new careers at the Department of Energy through this fellowship program. And we need to get that information out to our young people on our HBCU campuses. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I hope we brought you news that you can definitely use, because we've come to another end of another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And as I always say when I close, we hope we brought you news that you definitely can use. Also, ladies and gentlemen, if you are a D.C. resident, this is for D.C. residents now, we want to make sure that folks know that they can show up and get some help with weatherization items here through the Public Service Commission working with at Benning Darcy Heights Library, 3925 Benning Road, Northeast on December the 6th. Tinley Friendship Neighborhood Library, 4550 Wisconsin on December the 12th, which was yesterday. Williams Lockridge Bellevue Neighborhood Library at 115 Atlantic Street Southwest, December the 13th, which is today. Northeast One Neighborhood Library on 155L Street Northwest, December 21st. Now, Jamp near Thornton's Shepherd Park Neighborhood, 7420 Georgia Avenue, January the 10th. in Woodbridge Neighborhood Library, 1801 Hammond Street, Northeast, January 17, 2024. Now, all the times to go there is 4 to 6 p.m. on each one of these dates. The time window is 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we are totally out of time here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Until next week, we always say, what? Go in peace as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.